Good morning, and welcome to Kale and Company Live here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. A delight to have you along with us here on this somewhat snowy, cold Thursday morning, otherwise known as opening day of the Major League Baseball season. How appropriate. Snow and cold temperatures for opening day at Fenway Park. 2:10 this afternoon, the Red Sox and the Baltimore Orioles will be going at it at Fenway Park. And boy, it's really amazing to look at some of the ticket outlets that are selling Red Sox tickets, not only for today, but for the rest of the season, and to see how relatively inexpensive opening tickets are this year as compared to years gone by. And I think you can get a ticket on the secondary market, as it were, for less than $20 for opening day at Fenway Park, which for the last 40 years has been really unheard of. I'm just checking right now to see how much two tickets would be at Fenway on StubHub. Yeah, you can get into the grandstand for $18 a ticket, which is just unheard of.
Ken,
yes.
We have a special guest on the phone.
Do we have Neil Levesque with us today?
I'm on. Hey, in the grandstand.
You're in the grandstand. You're in section 17, row 3, seat 6 at Fenway Park. Chilly, cold, snowy. And what a great opening day.
Yeah.
Well, we know it's opening day for the baseball season, but we also know Neil Levesque, who is the executive director of the New Hampshire Institute of Politics at St. Anselm College, that the New Hampshire primary season got underway a long time ago.
Yeah, we're kind of mid-season at this point.
Right.
At least my schedule has been crazy. It's we have a steady drumbeat of activity, particularly going into April. Usually campaigns actually don't schedule too much further than a month or 6 weeks. And that sort of looking forward, that period is full with different candidates coming in New Hampshire. But in the past week or two, we had Chris Christie on Monday.
Yep.
Really interesting event, very engaging with the audience. And we had Nikki Haley here a couple weeks ago. Again, a very engaging town hall meeting that she conducted at the Institute. She was back again on Monday and Tuesday in New Hampshire, so she's definitely moving forward. We've booked the mayor of Miami, Francis Suarez, who is sort of a national Republican figure, apparently an incredible speaker. He's coming in the first part of April. DeSantis is coming into New Hampshire. We don't have him, but the Republican Party does for a fundraiser. I guess he's doing a book signing as well. So just a lot of activity all the way around.
It's a beehive of activity for the first in the nation primary. We still don't know what the date is going to be. I guess that depends on what South Carolina does. Is that true? How do we determine when it's going to happen?
Well, the Secretary of State will set the date. And a lot of the times we've set the date, the state has set the date very late in the season. I can remember, you know, hosting national network, you know, like ABC News,
yeah,
primary debates at St. Anselm, and they just didn't even know when the actual date was going to be. And when you're, you know, doing a multi-million dollar setup for a debate, and you don't even know when the actual date is,
yeah,
so your debate would be like the final weekend, and you can't determine when that is. It's actually quite problematic, but I don't even think that we'll know probably in November when our date will be.
Wow, that is really something. But we here in New Hampshire are ready to go at a moment's notice.
We are. I think that voters here in New Hampshire, we're the most engaged voters in the nation. We have the highest voter turnouts. You know, people joke that this is our state sport. I think that we've proven it time and time again with how we engage with candidates, with voters, with all the different aspects of an election. And we do so, take it very seriously. So I think if the New Hampshire presidential primary was tomorrow, we'd have a record-breaking turnout.
I think you're absolutely right, Neil Levesque. And you mentioned Chris Christie being in earlier this week. And, of course, that appearance by Chris Christie really captured, I think, a national audience with some of the things he had to say about former President Trump.
Definitely. So there were many different aspects of this event. I had him last summer, too. It was a little bit different format, and I think he engaged a little bit differently. But, yes, his appearance made everything from the New York Times, the Washington Post, The Hill, the Drudge Report, everything, because basically he basically said, and I was summarizing it, that President Trump really can't be our nominee, our being the Republicans' nominee, again, and he laid out many different reasons why, but mainly the fact that Republicans just didn't want to lose again, and that Republicans had lost in 2022 in the midterms when they should have won a lot of elections and controlled the House and Senate, and of course in 2020 they lost as well. And so I think that there is a larger group of Republicans who are now sort of thinking about this subject, that maybe someone else campaigning on the Republican mantle could carry the message forward, and it's not necessarily former President Trump. And a lot of that has to do with, if you look at the data, Trump is very popular in the Republican Party, but he has a ceiling, and particularly amongst the general electorate. He has people that, you know, love him or hate him, that's exactly what it is. But you're not sort of wishy-washy about it. You're either with him or not. And it's hard for him to grow that number. And that, of course, is what the theory is. That if you nominate Trump, how do you increase that number so that he can actually win the general election? And I think that a lot of people believe that that is an almost impossible task.
I mean, obviously, the general perception is that Trump could win the Republican nomination by a landslide, but yet also lose in the general election in a landslide to President Biden.
And Chris Christie highlighted that and said, you know, I talked to a lot of Republicans who say, well, I know he can't win, but I like what he said and he agrees with me, so I'm going to vote for him. And it's like, well, at some point, if you're not going to win and you're just going to vote for someone that makes you feel good about your own opinions and things like that, the party's just not going to exist sooner or later. I mean, you're going to be like the Libertarian Party, 3%.
I looked at a recent Fox News poll that was released within the last 24 hours. And among Republican primary voters, Donald Trump right now stands at 54%, an overwhelming lead over Ron DeSantis at 24%, Mike Pence with 6%, Liz Cheney and Nikki Haley both with 3%, and Greg Abbott with 2%. And I must say that this poll, which was conducted more recently, gave Trump a bigger lead than he had in a February 2023 poll. So
that's correct.
Yeah,
I've seen that poll as well. And, you know, what's interesting is, you know, it's still really, really early, right? So no ads have run. No one's really had a debate. So it's kind of like, are you familiar with this name? It would be the better thing, not necessarily who you're going to vote for in the end. But he certainly does have a commanding lead amongst those Republican voters. One thing to keep in mind, of course, in New Hampshire is independents or undeclared voters can also vote. So in New Hampshire, you know, that number would be smaller amongst people who are going to vote in a Republican primary next year, particularly if there's no Democratic primary, which there may or may not be. But So I think that those numbers are probably accurate in the fact that right now, if votes were cast amongst just Republicans nationwide, I mean, Trump would win. But the question is, in a general election, would he also win? And that's a big question mark.
Now, that's a huge question mark. And I think the answer to that is no. I really do. When you figure in all the independent voters there are out there, and they are growing in numbers with each and every election cycle. And I don't think he can win. I don't think he can win in a general election. Neil Levesque is with us, the executive director of the New Hampshire Institute of Politics at St. Anselm College. Neil, can you stay with us?
Yes, I can.
All right. And we will talk a lot more about what's going on with the primary and other things right here on Kale & Company Live, presented by Northeast Delta Dental. Northeast Delta Dental has individual and family plans designed to fit your lifestyle. Learn more and find your plan at DeltaDentalCoversMe.com. Back with Neil Levesque right after these words on WKXL and NHTalkRadio.com. Kale and Company Live here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Joining us, Neil Levesque, the executive director of the New Hampshire Institute of Politics at St. Anselm College. And, of course, we're talking about the upcoming, we don't exactly know when, but it is upcoming, presidential primary in our first in the nation primary state of New Hampshire. And not to make it all about Trump, but Neil, it would seem, it would appear that the Fox News has lifted their moratorium against Donald Trump because for months they very rarely mentioned his name. And I think it was obviously on purpose. Even his daughter-in-law, Lara Trump, was dumped as a Fox News contributor. But now, this week, on a couple of nights, he was back on talking with Sean Hannity.
Well, maybe Sean Hannity has the power on the network to sort of interview who he wants. That's what I would suspect. It is very interesting watching Fox News in the morning. In particular, I watch it. And, you know, they'll be at some diner in Florida, and everyone's like, free Florida, Ron DeSantis is great. And then there's some country western singer in the corner of the diner saying, I wrote this little song for our governor Ron DeSantis. It's like a full scale ad for DeSantis. It's very interesting, you know, to see the sort of way that news networks now pick candidates. Yeah. And you know, I watch all these networks because of my job.
Sure.
And it's just amazing. You, same story and interpreted six different ways. And I just feel bad for regular folks who are working hard all day long. And, you know, they want to get the news, but they just want the real news. And how do you cherry pick what's the best newspaper or what's the best news outlet to get it at? It's a fascinating thing that happens because it literally it's almost every source now is biased.
Well, no question. I guess you pick the news source that best fits your slant on the news, right?
Well, people want affirmation, not information now.
Yep.
So
You've said that many times.
Right. We all know people that are like, well, I only watch this station because they completely agree with me. Yeah, well, of course they do.
Yeah.
And then did you buy the pillow, too, you know, because the pillow's for sale.
Sure, yes, yeah. Good old Mike Lindell. But, you know, we haven't talked about one Republican candidate. I'm not even sure if he is a Republican, but we see him on television buying ads more than any other candidate right now, and that's Vivek Ramaswamy.
That's right.
Yeah.
So he's kind of doing this cultural movement. So, interestingly, last spring, I actually did a Zoom interview with him because it was during COVID. I forget when it was exactly, but it was during COVID and we couldn't do it in person. So we he had written a book called Woke Inc., which is actually a very interesting book. And I interviewed him about the book. We've had him back a couple times since COVID, but he is a very interesting person, apparently very wealthy, young, of Indian descent, obviously. And I say obviously because his last name is harder to pronounce than mine. And he's a very interesting person, and he's really making his way through the Granite State and running ads. So, you know, I think in the post-Pete Buttigieg world, and I like to use him as an example because he's just so, you know, his meteoric rise really has to do with the state of New Hampshire, which he's now quickly forgotten about because he's a member of the Biden administration. He doesn't think that New Hampshire should be first anymore. He basically started out this mayor from Midwestern small city, and he was campaigning in New Hampshire, and people really sort of took to him. And I think that any of these candidates that maybe are not national names, like Vivek, you know, if they really pound the pavement here and they have an attractive theme and message, it might work.
Yeah, I mean, this is the best state going for retail politics, and so why not? I mean, and you see him on WMUR all the time. He's got commercials and elsewhere as well. So Vivek Ramaswamy is out there, and he seems in interview. I didn't see your interview with him, Neil, but I've seen a couple, and he seems like a very bright, intelligent guy.
Oh, he's definitely He's definitely all that, and really fights about this. Basically, the book is about the fact that you have these corporations who come out and say these very politically correct things, like on Black Lives Matter and things like that. But then at the same breath, that same corporation is in China, not saying a word about some of their atrocities and sucking up to the Chinese government. And basically what it is that the social engineering of corporations has little to do with real things that they care about. But of course, here's the ending line here, Ken. It's about money.
Yep, exactly. But he does, as you pointed out, seem to have lots of it. I mean, this is pretty much a self-funded campaign thus far, I'd have to think.
Oh, absolutely. He's got a pretty sizable staff, very capable staff, by the way. And they're going across the state. So I would not count him out. I think he's a very interesting person, and he's definitely getting some interest.
So we know Trump's in the race. We know Nikki Haley's in the race. We know Vivek Ramaswamy is in the race. And some others still, you know, on the fence. They're probably not on the fence, really. But, you know, I guess we pretty much assume that Ron DeSantis is going to get in at some point. But what about some of the others, like Mike Pence and our governor, Chris Sununu?
Well, I think some of these people haven't gotten in because once you say I'm running for president, it triggers a whole bunch of Federal Election Commission work. You can sort of explore a candidacy, and I believe that Sununu is definitely doing that in a very strong way at this point. And I think he's doing it because there's a lot of national interest in him. I think he's on some national shows this weekend, in fact, as he has been in the previous weeks.
Yeah,
I think he was on Fox yesterday. He's speaking to different groups across the country, and I think that there's a lot of interest in him. Hey, it's a great story to tell about New Hampshire. And, you know, if you love Sununu or you don't love him, the one thing that you have to say is that he's probably one of the best communicators in the Republican Party at this point. There is no doubt about that. This is a guy who does the State of the State address in front of the entire legislature without a note. You know, this is not Joe Biden, who has to read off a teleprompter in order to talk about a school shooting. Really shocking news conference, by the way, the other day.
Yeah.
Really, really shocking news conference in the White House.
It really was. I'm not sure everybody saw it that's listening right now, but he started off, talking about that he was the husband of Dr. Jill Biden. Then he went off talking about ice cream on the day of this mass shooting in Nashville.
I watch a lot of political things, and I cut a lot of politicians slack about different things. But we're watching the fresh news of a school shooting and the tragedy, and, you know, all the networks have it. And then they say, well, we're going to cut to the president because he's going to talk about school shooting. And he comes out with this smiley sort of grandfatherly thing going on, and he starts talking about how he's got all kinds of chocolate chip ice cream upstairs, and they came down here just for the chocolate chip ice cream. And then the news networks were kind of, they cut back to the anchors who were kind of looking like at their feet, not knowing what to say for once. And then they cut right back to him, and it was like somebody just kind of snapped their fingers and said, okay, now it's time to be solemn. And then he was really solemn, and it was just very disingenuous. I was very shocked. I think a lot of people who were watching it live were really shocked.
I think most of America was shocked. There's no doubt about that when he came out with those initial remarks. And it was as if he had no knowledge of what was going on. I wonder if he, I was wondering at the time if he had been informed of what exactly he was going to be discussing. But apparently he was informed, and it was very, very shocking. Hey, Neil, I hate to say, can you do one more segment?
Yeah, I can.
All right. I love it. Neil Levesque with us from the New Hampshire Institute of Politics at St. Anselm College, where he is the executive director and has been for a long time, part of the political landscape here in the state of New Hampshire. And we will be right back. Neil has generously agreed to do one more segment with us here on Kale & Company. We appreciate that. And we will be back right after these words. We are presented by Northeast Delta Dental. Looks like it's going to be a balmy 39 degrees at game time at Fenway Park today for the season opener between the Red Sox and the Baltimore Orioles, as we welcome you back to Kale & Company Live here on WKXL. Neil Levesque, the executive director of the New Hampshire Institute of Politics at St. Anselm College, is with us. And I had a couple of more political questions, Neil, but I do want to give you the opportunity right here on Kale & Company to brag about your nephew.
All right, I'll just say this. If you're a sports person and you've been putting your child into a uniform at a very, very young age, whether it's hockey, baseball, football, whatever it is, so this was the fate of my sister, who for years this kid could barely walk and he had skates on, 10 p.m. ice time practices his whole life. So now he's a Bishop Brady High School senior. He's a forward. No,
Bishop Gurton.
Bishop Gurton.
Yes.
Sorry, that's where my daughter went. And Bishop Gurton.
Yeah.
And they're playing their Division I state championship. Division I state championship. It all comes down to this, right? So they have a lead. 1 minute left. The lead is eliminated. Now they go into overtime against Bedford, and they go into overtime, and my nephew is skating in a goal, and someone penalties him, and now it's him versus the goalie. That's it. So he skates right down, and in the final shot of his career, all those practices, all those games, all that driving, he shoots and scores, and Bishop Gurton wins the state championship. I mean, talk about an ending to all of that. And I was just thinking, I'm not as much a sports guy, Ken, as you know, but I was thinking, how many kids across the country really have an ending like that in their sports career. He's not going to play in college, so, you know, this is it. And it was really just the best ending for this kid. I kind of feel bad because I felt like saying, you know, the rest of life, you know, is not like this, you know. So, but it was really quite something. And it happened at the SNU Arena, so pretty great.
And his name is?
Logan Vogel.
Yep. And I tell you, I've done a few games over the years. I do the Concord games. And, you know, it wasn't a very happy time for Concord because they were eliminated by Bedford in the semifinals. And, of course, Bishop Girton with Logan defeated Bedford in the championship game and on a penalty shot. I mean, what a dramatic finish
that was. And Bishop Girton had lost to Concord. I will say this, that this Concord kid, Craigie, again, I'm not the biggest sports guy. I've never seen a kid like this skate and play hockey. So I guess he's going to Merrimack High School to play baseball. You know, if I were the Merrimack athletic director, I'd be like, what size skates do you take there? This kid in Concord High School is an unbelievable player.
Yeah, Brooks Craig is amazing, set all kinds of records during his four-year career at Concord High School. In the 4 years, Neil, that he played there, that Brooks Craig played at Concord, since he was a freshman, the team had lost four games in 4 years and won three state championships in a row. Now he's going to Merrimack College, as you said, and he is going to play baseball. Now, Brooks is a dynamic player. There's no doubt about that. And he you know, skated circles around most of the kids in Division I for the last 4 years. I think the problem is that a school like Merrimack, where they play in Hockey East, he is, I think, a little bit too small for that level of hockey, and I think that's why he chose baseball. And I think perhaps his first love is baseball, believe it or not. And you know, he's very excited about going to Merrimack College to play baseball. He has another season left at Concord High School to play baseball, but he is just an amazing, amazing athlete. And very few like him that is so versatile and can do so many things.
And it's very different, you know, with these different sports. So if you want to play hockey in college, you got to go to a PG year or play juniors, you know, up in Canada or something and start bulking up. But if you want to play baseball, they'll actually, you know, try to recruit you right out of college to play pro, you know. So it's a completely different situation.
Yeah. No doubt. And so he'll be going to Merrimack College in the fall. And like I say, we have more chances this year before the season is over and hasn't started yet. But when the Concord High baseball season starts, you'll have a chance to see Brooks in action right here in our backyard of WKXL at the Doan Diamond at Memorial Field in Concord. And Brooks is just a great athlete, and he will definitely be missed, no doubt about that. So just getting back to politics for a moment, Neil, before we have to wrap it up. It does, we talked about the, the very shocking remarks that President Biden had the other day in the wake of these six people being killed at a Christian school, a Catholic school in Nashville, Tennessee. But it appears more and more as if he's going to seek a second term. Would you agree?
Oh, I think that's why they're trying to rig the election and get rid of the New Hampshire presidential primary and not count the votes of New Hampshire Democrats that want to vote in the primary. He doesn't want to have to come to a state like New Hampshire. And because he's basically reading off a teleprompter at this point, and he can't go out and meet voters and take questions from reporters. That's clearly obvious. It's very apparent. Unfortunately, they've really, in a terrible way, said that diversity is the reason they're doing this, which, of course, you know, diversity is a very worthy goal for our nation. But you know, when you use that word basically to remain in political power, it's really sad. So I don't mince words about this. I think it's terrible what the White House and the president is trying to do with our primary. They're not going to succeed. I think that actually he'll probably have his own primary in the Democratic Party, because about two-thirds, maybe three-quarters of the Democrats out there don't want him to run and know that he probably is not going to be the strong candidate. But they don't know what to do about it. They can't talk about it. If you're in the Beltway power thing, you can't talk out against the president. You'll be ostracized. So that's why the DNC people, who are all insiders, they get invited to all the fancy dinners, and they get, you know, offered ambassadorships and all kinds of other things. They're going along with the party line. But trust me, if any Democrat thinks that Joe Biden is the strong candidate going forward, I just don't know what to say. The numbers too also don't show that. His numbers are terrible. Vice President Harris's numbers are even worse. That's why she's in the continent of Africa right now, rather than dealing with her assignment of the southern border. So I think there's a lot of issues here, and I think Democrats, in their own peril, will remain sort of mum about this and just allow Biden to run for re-election unscathed and face a potentially strong Republican candidate.
And it's going to have to be, Neil, wouldn't you think, a much different campaign this time than in 2020, because there's no COVID really to hide behind. You can't stay in the bunker as he did in Delaware for almost the entire 2020 campaign. It's going to have to be a different kind of campaign for him, wouldn't you think?
Absolutely. So what did we see the other day after the school shooting? Was he came out and he was riffing about ice cream because he didn't look at the teleprompter for what the staff had said. This is what you need to say. And that's kind of scary, right? Is that going to happen more often? Absolutely. And what they're doing now is they're sending the first lady out, the vice president to some degree, members of the cabinet and Democratic governors, they're sending them out as surrogates for the president, because there is no COVID and you can't hide in the basement. And that's going to be their strategy. So, for example, in Tennessee today, in the aftermath of school shootings, the president is not there. The first lady is there. So, you know, this is the kind of thing that you're going to start to see.
Yeah. Well, Neil, I appreciate the time, and always great to chat with you. Hope you'll come back soon as the primary season continues. Maybe in the next few months we'll get a date for when the primary is actually going to take place. But in the meantime, candidates will continue to declare their candidacy, and we will stay in touch.
Thank you, Ken. Always great to be on with my longtime friend.
All right, Neil, thank you so much. We appreciate you coming on and appreciate all the time you spend. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Neil Levesque, the executive director of the New Hampshire Institute of Politics at St. Anselm College. Kale & Company Live right here, presented by Northeast Delta Dental. Hey, tomorrow, Friday Fun Bunch with Tom Raffio, president and CEO of Northeast Delta in the house, along with our resident flick chick, Kitty Ray, who I know saw another movie this week. She sees more movies than anybody I know. We will take a break and continue right after these words. It's opening day. Kale & Company Live right here on WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. Kale & Company Live here on WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. We are presented by Northeast Delta Dental. Boy, 42 years ago today, March 30th, 1981, President Ronald Reagan was shot and seriously injured outside a Washington, D.C. hotel by John W. Hinckley, Jr., also wounded White House Press Secretary James Brady, Secret Service Agent Timothy McCarthy, and a District of Columbia Police Officer Thomas Delahanty. what a memorable day, and not in such a good way, obviously, that that was. And that was on the day of an NCAA basketball final. It was a Monday. And there was some question as to whether the game would go on. It did. It did. And, of course, this country certainly concerned about the well-being of President Reagan, who came through it very well. But it was really a day that all of us who were around 42 years ago will never forget, that is for sure. It was also on this date in 1923, thought I'd mention this one, the Cunard liner RMS Laconia became the first passenger ship to circle the globe as it arrived in New York. So there's some trivia for you today. The Cunard liner RMS Laconia, first passenger ship to circle the globe. Well, today is opening day of the baseball season, and Fenway Park, ready for another season opener. New kind of family fun will be on display at Fenway. That's from the Boston Herald. After the gates open at Fenway today, fans will get their opportunity to test their pitch speed in a pitching cage while solving a giant Rubik's Cube portrait and comparing their height to that of Red Sox third baseman Rafi Devers and newcomer Masataka Yoshida, among other players. Now, the biggest new fan-friendly amenity this season will be the enhanced kids concourse in right field inside Gate B. Red Sox president and CEO Sam Kennedy said Tuesday, after he and other team officials showed off ballpark improvements to Boston Mayor Michelle Wu, Fenway hosted its first game back when? Folks, in your vehicles or if you're listening at home, when was that first Fenway game? 1912 at Fenway. It's the oldest park in the big leagues. Next would be Wrigley Field. And you know what third is on that list, believe it or not? Dodger Stadium in Los Angeles. So Sam Kennedy said, for our younger fans who are coming out to Fenway to enjoy a baseball game and get into the game yourself, it's huge, that kids area in right field. It creates a buzz, energy, life in the ballpark when we have younger fans here. Kennedy also said that $9 tickets, $9 for students are available for games in April and May as the sellout environment that Fenway grew accustomed to in the early 2000s and 2010s is no longer. And you can tell that by the price of an opening day ticket, where you can buy a ticket right now as we speak here at 8:53 live in the morning. You can buy a ticket for under $20 for opening day at Fenway. You could not have said that since 1967. After that, after 67, everything changed. 67, opening day attendance was like 8,000 at Fenway. Red Sox won the American League pennant in 67. And after that, every home opener has been completely sold out. And tickets, very, very expensive. But not so much. I personally feel the Red Sox, and maybe I'm saying this with my heart, more than my head, as sometimes I do. That's why I'm not a good sports bettor. Because I think with my heart instead of my head. I think the Red Sox may surprise some people. I really do. People, every time you think the Red Sox are not going to do anything, they usually do. The most recent example of that was 2013. 2012, under manager Bobby Valentine, the Red Sox finished last in the American League East, and no one thought they had much of a shot in 2013. However, what did they do? They won the World Series. And not only won the World Series for the first time since 1918, they won it at home. So just when you think the Red Sox are down and out, that's sometimes when they have played their best baseball. Hey, nobody thought they were going to do anything in 1967. They finished a half game out of last place in 66. The only team worse than them in 66 were the Yankees. But somehow, Red Sox, in their impossible dream year, managed to get to the World Series in 67, turn the whole franchise around. They didn't win the World Series that year, but it was a franchise changer. But tickets available. If you're still thinking about going down, check out any of the secondary ticket sites. And there are, as they say, good seats still available at reasonable prices for opening day. Lots of changes. This is from Tom Boswell, longtime baseball writer from the Washington Post. From 1955 to 1969, the average time of a Major League Baseball game, including extra innings, was a little over 2.5 hours. By 2020, a baseball game took 3 hours and 11 minutes. So Tom Boswell is writing here, last year in retirement, I took a trial separation from watching MLB in its torpid entirety. I would record games and then fly through them on fast forward. A longevity calculator said, if I smoked all my life would be shorter. But if I watched MLB, it would just feel that way. And then it happened. This year in spring training, using the new pitch clock, the average time of a 9-inning game in spring training was 2 hours and 35 minutes. Baseball has been saved by the pitch clock. For decades, I screamed, speed up the game before you kill it. Now I can't believe what I'm seeing. MLB has turned back the clock with a clock by 60 years. So we shall see how it plays out. And this is not Mr. Boswell anymore. This is Ken Kale speaking. The average time of game, yes, it is true, in spring training was 2 hours and 35 minutes. Now let's see what it is in the regular season. I think there's going to be more offense this year in Major League Baseball. And I say that because shifting, there are no more shifts, and I love it. There are no more shifts in baseball. You have to have two infielders on the left side of the infield, two infielders on the right side of the infield. You can't have your feet at all on the outfield grass. So shifting is over, which to me is going to lead to more offense. And if there's more offense, there are going to be more runs in baseball. I don't mind that at all. I think there's going to be a lot more action in Major League Baseball this year. Not only is there a pitch clock, and the pitch clock is you have to release the ball within 15 seconds of getting it back from the catcher from the previous pitch when there is nobody on base. It's 20 seconds when there are men on base, 15 when there's nobody on, 20 seconds when there are people on base. The bases are bigger. Bases have been enlarged, folks, and it's to encourage more stolen bases, which means more offense. I think this is going to be a very exciting year for Major League Baseball. I think a lot of people are pumped up about it because the pace is going to be quicker. The pace is definitely going to be quicker. Will the game times, as we go into the regular season, will they be shorter? Maybe. I'm not convinced until I actually see it. You can do all you want in spring training, but when it comes down to it, when all the regular lineups are in force for these major league teams, I think there's going to be a lot more offense than there was last year. I think there's going to be a lot more stolen bases, and I think it's going to be a terrific year. Another thing pitchers can only do is throw over to first base twice during each at-bat. So they can only throw over twice. If they throw over a third time and they don't pick the runner off first base, that runner automatically goes to second base. It's going to be fun to see how it all plays out. And the Red Sox and the Orioles will get the season started at 2:10 this afternoon at Fenway Park. Everybody in action today in Major League Baseball. Yankees will be opening at home today against the San Francisco Giants. Now, if you're listening on our rebroadcast after 7 o'clock, you already know what happened in those games, don't you? But anyway, enjoy the season. It's going to be a lot of fun. I think a lot of people are excited about what's been changed. And we'll see how it all plays out. And I know we'll talk more about this tomorrow. Right here, Kale and Company on WKXL, presented by Northeast Delta Dental. Friday Fun Bunch tomorrow, and Monday, get this, the return of Charlie Sherman to the New Hampshire airwaves. Right here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Have a great opening day, everybody.